You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines. It has been a couple of weeks, my friends. It has been an absolute whirlwind. 2 weeks ago with our road show through the Midwest, going right into bottling prep and preparedness, which we wrapped up 2 days ago. I am bummed that I have not had an hour or two to kill just to record something and get it out on the interweb to keep you all updated with what we have going on. But here we are. We're back. We're doing the thing, scoring the points, winning the game. That's what we're going to be doing today. We have a whole lot to catch up on. My goodness, we have a lot of things to catch up on. We missed out on our normal Q&A episode, so I'm going to try and tackle a couple things. We had a lot of comments 2 weeks ago after our tariff conversation, and of course, that has only gotten blown up over the last couple of weeks after the quote-unquote Liberation Day or whatever the hell, you know, it was supposed to be called. We've got, of course, a bottling update. We've got the growing season coming around. I'm going to try to hit as many of these high points as we can to play a whole bunch of catch-up this episode. We got all kinds of stuff to dive into. Before we do, for those of you that, of course, have been following us on social media, on Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, the MyFace, as well as what's the other one that we post on YouTube, where you can find the video version of this podcast. Thank you all for continuing to follow our journey and kind of the regular updates we've been posting while we've been on the road as we were doing cellar work and bottling, all that good stuff. Please be sure to follow us at MTGA Wines on any of those social networks. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show here, wherever you're consuming your podcast. That would be huge. And if you do have a quick moment to leave us a quick review, whether that's one of the ratings of like stars or a comment is huge. If you can share it with friends, colleagues, anybody else who might be interested in wine, wine business, you know, any number of topics that you know that we covered here, please. That helps in kind of the algorithm, getting the word out and about of what we do, kind of what we're all about. And that is always very nice. So I appreciate you all. Let's just dive right into it, shall we? I'm going to completely forego any other announcements for the time being because we got a lot of stuff to cover. We're going to go right into the heavy stuff first. And then we're going to end on a very positive note with how kind of the season's going and shaping up and everything here. But 2 weeks ago, we released the Totally Tariffed episode. This is right after an announcement that there may or may not be a 200-ish whatever percent tariff put onto alcohol products coming from the EU. Now, of course, a lot has changed and a lot of things continue to move and evolve over the last couple of weeks since we posted that episode. We received quite a few comments from many of you stating, you know, one, you're either against, you know, what would be considered, you know, kind of retaliatory tariffs. Now that the chart came out that made hardly any sense at all, that we're taxing, or tariffing an island that only has penguins on it. That's probably just for the memes, but whatever. You know, there's a lot to dive into here. I'm going to condense this down as kind of best I can because I don't want to spend the whole episode on it. But because this, we got a lot of responses about this, I want to at least touch on it. You know, very similar to, you know, what we were talking about this fall with the wine business and grape contracts and pricing and kind of just the turmoil of the wine industry. You know, I do want to try and lean into topics that you all are interested on. So we're going to continue that. And if we continue this conversation, great. You know, I don't want this to be too much of a political commentary. I'm going to give you my very novice opinion on a lot of this stuff and maybe do a summary. I'm sure many of you are smart individuals. You've listened to the news or some source to figure out kind of what way is up. You've probably come to some sort of conclusion about the good, bad, and ugly of what we got going on. But let's go ahead and dive into it as far as like the wine industry is concerned, right? So basically, you know, the grand scheme of the tariffs, right, is to bring a bunch of these countries to the negotiating table. Allegedly, you had the EU propose a zero, you know, tariff solution between us and them, which I think is a great solution. I think that's the ideal solution to actually create what is true, like free trade between countries. Because let's face it, the way American goods are tariffed or whatever taxes we have on other stuff, like that's not free trade because it costs people money. So if that's really kind of the solution that we're looking for, then I think that that's something that we can hopefully lean on. Maybe the administration will lean on it. We'll see. But obviously, you know, this whole tariff thing was floated as a way to increase revenue while cutting costs so that we could balance the budget of this fine country that we live in. Do I think that this is necessarily the right way to go about it? Not necessarily. Could it work? Maybe. I don't know. I'm too dumb to, you know, sort a lot of this stuff out. But, you know, realistically, with all the turmoil that we've seen for companies, I mentioned the friends of ours who have been affected by this in that last episode, it's a good old gobbledygook of a mess, right? It's just completely all over the place. Now, I think the only, like, maybe shining light of this is, like, really going to actually have any kind of effect is if, you know, the administration does cut income tax for people like they've kind of floated. Because, you know, obviously, tariffs are inflationary, like that pair of Nikes or those sunglasses, that watch, that phone, like whatever consumer good or manufacturing good you're purchasing, if that goes up 20, 100, 200%, you as a company, you're going to have to charge more for that product and you might lose that consumer, right? But if consumers at the same time have more money in the bank and can spend that money, theoretically, it's like a net zero. It's just, it's all posturizing kind of bullshit at that point, it seems like. But it's like, okay, if consumers can continue to afford some of this stuff because their taxes are getting cut and they have more money in the bank, then okay, maybe it's like a net zero kind of thing. It's just posturizing between countries about who controls what and who's bringing in revenue and all these other things. I don't know. But like, that's the only way that this like makes any kind of sense realistically at a consumer level, particularly when you're talking about wine, right? Let's imagine those European imports we talked about 2 weeks ago goes actually up 200% and this zero tariff thing between us and the EU doesn't go through. Well, then guess what? If people love to continue spending money on those wines, they're going to have to spend a lot more. And if you have less money in the bank, then that's kind of a problem, right? So like, let's try and polish this turd a little bit and say like, hey, let's actually cut the income tax stuff. Let's save people a lot of money so they can spend that money and that discretionary income as they see fit on these goods that may or may not be more expensive. I think that could work to a certain degree. You know, is the whole reshoring jobs thing actually a thing? No. I mean, in the long term, maybe, but you're talking about factories that have already like moved out of like, say, China, for example, to Vietnam or India. Like, I think there's clothing companies that have done that. Apple's done that. And now it's like, oh, well, we're going to tariff those countries anyway. Now you got to move your shit back here to the good old US of A. And it's like, well, okay, cool. Well, that's going to cost us hundreds of millions, billions of dollars to do that. You know, is there going to be some sort of tax credit for us? Is it actually going to be worth it? Can we produce this stuff here? Because manufacturing jobs, as many of us probably know, have largely been offshored. We don't make a lot of stuff to export here in this country anymore. That's just kind of the reality of the situation. So if we're going to start doing that and really legitimately building things here again, that's a long ramp-up time. Just is the way it is. It's not going to happen in the next 6 months as we sort out all of these negotiations. Not only that, you're probably going to have multiple administrations pass this one that's going to have to be on board with that idea to try and make it happen and onshore and create more jobs, manufacturing jobs, which, by the way, could just be taken over by robots here at some point in the near future anyway. So it's like, okay, how does this all shake down? So the reshoring jobs thing, like, who knows? Or trying to, you know, promote American businesses and stuff that's made here in the US. Like, maybe, like, in the grand scheme of wine, like, you're going to have to see a dramatic, you know, decrease in the cost of, you know, the wines that we make here in the US. You're also going to have to see the big producers stop making bullshit with a bunch of sugar and additives and other nonsense in it. Are they going to be on board to actually make higher quality products? Or are they just going to keep shoveling shit down our throats? Like, come on, like, this is such a rat's nest of issues, and there is no short-term solution to this. It's going to have to be a long-term thing, and there's just no way that it's going to shake out, you know, quickly and efficiently, right? Now, is it going to bring people to the negotiating table? Like, hopefully, maybe, we'll see. Like, some smaller countries have done that. Maybe this thing with the EU sticks. I mean, shoot, it's like 11-something on, you know, April 9th here in the morning. Something's probably changed by now because I haven't checked the news cycle yet today. So I might be saying all this, and of course, everything is completely changed. You know, there's a buddy of mine, we were talking about this, and he was worried about the market in particular. And of course, we've all seen the stock market take a huge hit. Is it a recession? Is it a correction? I mean, who knows? I mean, if you look at your portfolio over the last 5 years, if you're actually invested in the stock market, I think this is a fun stat that I did learn, that there's roughly 50% of Americans that have no vested interest in the stock market whatsoever. So if half the country is just operating on vibes on whether or not a color of a chart is green or red, what does that mean for the other half, right? So that's kind of a thing. So realistically, how important is the market and kind of where it's going now when it comes to like global economy, all that other stuff? Absolutely, I get it. But if selfishly people are here in the US worrying about their own pocketbook and they have no say or interest in what is actually going on in the stock market, then it's like, okay, well, then it goes down, it goes down. And if it goes up, I guess that means the economy is good. It's a kind of just a vibe check, right? For a huge swath of people in this country, right? And then there are some of us, of course, that maybe have some investments. We have the retirement accounts and we've seen them take a huge hit over the last couple of weeks. And we're like, well, what the shit, man? Like, what's going on here? But you look at the last 5 years and frankly, kind of the last 15 outside of the kind of blip during COVID, which was technically a recession. I believe it was classified as such. But you're looking at basically since 2011, almost unmitigated growth until the COVID thing happened. And even then, over the last 4 or 5 years, it's been just growing, growing, growing. So realistically, are a lot of people probably still ahead of where they were if they're actually invested? My guess is probably yes. Does it suck to lose 10, 15, 20% like overnight? Yeah, that really does suck. But is a correction needed? Are things overly inflated and overvalued? I kind of think so, in my novice opinion. Obviously, the inflammatory rhetoric doesn't particularly help, but here we are. But, you know, I don't even know where to go from there because, again, I'm no economist. I'm a dum-dum sitting over here. But it's like, all right, well, if a lot of the country is not involved in stocks and it's more of just a vibe check for a lot of people, does it hurt some of us? Yeah, sure, it absolutely does. But we've seen really good growth over the last 4 or 5 years, not to mention the last 14. So what are you going to do, right? I think there's, I mean, with all this tariffs, like all the lack of money that are things that seem to be contracting, I like maybe this is my own dumb opinion of this, but I do think that there is a check that needs to be had here in the US in terms of our like consumer mentality, right? And the reason why I think this is no joke, just over the last week, this kind of coincided with this, is I was searching for something on Amazon. It was literally a crock pot because I have to wax a bunch of our bottles that we bottled up. And the easiest way to do it is buy the wax and you put it into a crock pot and just melt the wax in the crock pot and you can dip the bottles into that. So I'm shopping for a crock pot. I have one of them. I needed a second one because we're doing another color. And I'm like, oh, I just need to, you know, find this one that I ordered. And this was like 3 years ago, right? And so I find the order, but I had to scroll through like 17 pages of Amazon orders that we, as a couple, the HBIC and I, placed in like 2022, 23, whatever it was. And in that moment, I'm like, did we really need to buy all this bullshit? Like, is this stuff that we actually needed in our day-to-day lives? Like, do we really need to be consuming this much? Do we need to be spending this money and kind of having this, you know, mentality around the goods that we quote want but don't necessarily need? Something to be said for that. You know, when it comes to like, do you really need the newest pair of Jordans at the drop, or you already have 4 pair, you really don't need them but they look cool and they're fresh, and you know, maybe that's a thing. I do think that there is a balance to be had there with us as consumers and kind of our mentality when it comes to buying cheap shit that we don't need. I think it's that scene from, you know, from a Fight Club. Like, you're not your fucking khakis, right? Like, it's okay to like the finer things and buy nice things and, you know, have some toys to play with from time to time. But it's a lot of stuff that we just want, not a lot of stuff that we actually need in our day-to-day life. And I think that that is something that a lot of people, including myself, need to come to terms with and probably need to be a lot more frugal. You know, could increased cost of goods and things push us in that direction, albeit it's not a great way to do it, but maybe it does. And that's not much of a bright side, but you know, that is something that I think is important. It's the same reason why I think we need to move away from kind of the quick fix, fast food mentality that we have in this country. This is my own little soapbox here, by the way, because a lot of that shit, we don't need it. It's not good for us. And we just need to move on. We need to try. And does that mean we need to like buy American only? No, you can buy great products from other countries and all that good stuff. Like, that's totally fine.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Fine. But the idea of, you know, quality over quantity, I think, is truly a thing. Now, obviously, there's a group of people that, you know, in their socioeconomic status, that they just need certain things, right? And if you see the cost of goods and certain stuff go up, then they're going to be negatively impacted in a huge way. And that's a huge problem, especially considering out how the middle class has been hollowed out over the last like 20 years, right? Like, this is a whole can of worms to get into, right? So, you know, you basically have like the upper middle class and then a big gap and then a bunch of other people and a few people at the very top trying to make policy decisions, right? So, you know, it's that needs to change. Obviously, we need to start closing that gap, in my humble opinion, and realistically punishing the people at the lower end of the spectrum because of reasons is not the way to go about it. You know, it's, you know, if you do something like cut the income tax for some of those folks that I think the number was, what, 150K a year, that it would go down to zero. Probably never going to happen, but here's to hoping. You know, maybe that's enough to help. Maybe it's not. Is it even going to be on the table at some point? Who knows, right? But none of this, it's just so crazy out there. And like, when it comes to the wine industry, and like, it's, we're sitting here trying to figure out, okay, where our barrels come from France, how much are those going to cost, you know, in the next couple of months? Because right now, none of those are on shore. They still have to be imported for us. So that's going to increase our cost potentially. All of our foils typically come from Spain. All of our corks come from Portugal. A lot of our glass will come from Central South America or China. What is that going to mean in terms of the cost of doing business in the wine industry? Like, how is this actually going to shake out? And I'm going to put a bow on this in this way, in that no one knows, right? We're all sitting here trying to hold on for all 8 seconds of this ride, hoping for the best. And it's pretty likely we're going to get kicked in the head by this bull rather than, you know, cleanly dismount, right? So, I'm typically the eternal pessimist. I'm trying to find, it's like, it's such a mess that even I am trying to find the positive light in a lot of this stuff. And it's really hard because I think there's like potential, like maybe some of the intentions are good of like increasing revenue, reducing our debt and balancing our budget. Like, okay, like I don't think anyone here can argue with like, that's a bad idea, but the way that's going, that we're going about it, who knows, man. Like, I really appreciate all you guys that wrote in about the tariffs and what you feel about them and how you think it's negative, or if some of you even said, you know, here's like the positive thing of trying to bring countries to the negotiating table, increasing revenue while decreasing government spending. I'm like, okay, like there's, I can see both sides. I don't know if I agree wholeheartedly with one or the other. I'm stuck in the middle being pulled in two directions, it feels like, based on how it's affecting me personally and our business as an industry personally. And it's like, it's hard to be objective when a lot of it is tied into what you do on a daily basis, right? Easy to get a little biased when it comes to that. So long story longer, I guess we'll wait and see what happens. But thank you all for tuning into that episode. If you need to go through my conversation of tariffs and kind of where I was trying to wrap my head around them, you can listen to our episode from, I think it was like March 12th or 19th or something like that. It was a couple of weeks ago. It's called Totally Tariffed. You can find it on our YouTube channel or wherever you're consuming your podcast. Let's get into some more positive stuff, shall we? I wanted to get that out of the way because it's obviously like the big feisty monster in the room right now. For, I think, everybody, not just the wine industry, and we're all trying to sort out, like, which way is up. You know, again, it's been, I started recording this 20 minutes ago. Things have probably changed in the last 20 minutes, right? All right, something more positive. Guys, the bottling truck and the truck to the warehouse, everything made it across that stupid filled-in bridge that washed out. I can't tell you how happy this makes me. And this is kind of a great vibe check for the industry in general. It was 2 weeks ago. I was at a winemaker roundtable, a bunch of colleagues. We were actually talking about like waterways and easements and like all kinds of other like construction type stuff. So I threw in, I'm like, hey, does anyone have any experience with like a road washing out and like trying to get access through neighbors and working with the county and all this stuff? And I talked about the bridge going out and all this. And people were like, no, that sucks. Good luck with that. But after that conversation, we had a bunch of people reach out being like, hey, if you need a place to custom crush, we should have space. Let us know what you need. This, that, and the other thing. Like the industry here has been so incredibly supportive of us, knowing that we're kind of in this bind. And I still don't have a lot of answers. The schedule for the county is still kind of up in the air. So we'll see how it sorts itself out. It's a complete mess, the process. Like if anyone is upset that the government's being shrunk right now, I'm like, let me tell you some stories. And I'm going to tell you one right now. This is a total tangent before we get into the bottling stuff. And I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the Doge thing and how haphazardly the hack and slash has been, but this is a really hilarious story, so bear with me. We got a notification from the county stating that the EPA has to get involved and like Fish and Wildlife has to get involved here with this bridge project because there's an endangered species of owl. It's like the Northern Californian spotted owl or something. That before they can start construction, they need to make sure that this particular owl is not going to be affected by it. So I'm not kidding you. This is exactly what happened because I saw it happen. So what they did was they sent out a couple of people who were sitting out there by this bridge that had washed out in lawn chairs, you know, that had a thermos, a lunchbox, or sitting there. And they were literally sitting there to observe, you know, this, you know, waterway, you know, look at the creek, see if there's anything down there, keep an eye out for this owl, apparently, and, you know, kind of observe the wilderness around the creek. Now, when it comes to this owl in particular, this is the issue, right? Is that these two folks were there from like, it was a 9-to-5 job during the day. I don't know how much you know about owls, but I'm fairly certain they're nocturnal. Like, if you're going to sit out there during the day, you're probably not going to see this fucking thing. So why are you out here? Like, what are you doing? This literally makes no sense. So that's the bridge update, is like they're doing surveying, they're investigating it, they're trying to get permits and all this other stuff, but it's fixed enough that we're able to get the bottling truck over it and we're actually able to bottle our wines. No owls were harmed in the process of getting the truck and trailer over this, you know, makeshift bridge that they've filled in, basically. I'm going to went off without a hitch. We got all of our white wines in the bottle. Again, this is one of those things, like when it comes to bottling, many of you have you know, heard the episode of bottling that I posted out there, just called Bottling's the Worst, because it is. It's hectic. There's 800 moving parts. Something always breaks. Something always goes wrong. And even talking to my guy Chris, big shout out to Chris and Ultima Bottling here in Napa, who helped us make this happen, and we're so flexible and changing dates and, you know, having to reschedule all this. Like, it was such a disaster. And even Chris was saying, it's like, you know, like the runs we do with you and like MTGA, like they go pretty well. Like, there's always a little something, but overall, like, we come in, we line it up, we knock it down, and there's really not too many issues. And that was prompted by me saying, like, this has been the easiest bottling run I think I've ever been a part of. You know, our bottling runs are annoying because we do so many small lots. Like, we only bottled, I think, 450 cases this last week, but that was across 7 wines, 8 wines, something like that. So it was just all, like, you're just running all over the place from one tank to the next, moving stuff, doing stuff. Like, it's just a lot. A lot's going on. But we got to, like, the last 2 wines during this bottling run, and holy shit. It was like, it's like you're watching a pitcher go for a perfect game. You don't look at him. You don't talk to him. You don't even think about it. Like, it's like, no, they're just playing the game. Like, we're not even going to acknowledge what's happening right here. And I was walking up the catwalk to, like, connect and open up another tank and get ready for the next wine. And I was literally thought in my head, like, you should say it. Like, this is something you say out loud. Be like, oh, this run is going really well. And as soon as I thought that in my head, I'm like, nope, shut up. Don't say anything. If you say something, it's all going to go wrong. You have to just keep your mouth shut. Keep working. When the day is done, you know, you can then say how smooth the bottling run went. It's the, you know, don't count your, you can't be counting your money at the table, right? You can count it after the dealing's done, right? It's that kind of mentality, right? But it went off without a hitch. All of Brittany's wines got into bottle. We have the Chenin Blanc in bottle officially, a new vintage of Rosé, her Grenache, all the white wines for MTGA, some Grand Cask wines that we're going to be releasing later this year. It all went amazingly. All things considered. And the trailer and the truck, they almost fell into the creek, but it was fine. Like, it's fine. Like, there's all the space that it had to get across this now little corridor that's makeshift, worked, and we got through it, and it was all good. So luckily enough, I think we're looking pretty good. And in fact, we have our next bottling run on the calendar for July. So now that we know we can get it done, it's like, okay, we got to start planning for the next one and make sure that we can get it done before construction starts. That way we can actually make it happen and not have to wait until like December or January or February next year to do this bottling run for the rest of our 2023 vintage. All kinds of stuff coming down the pipeline. But I know a lot of you have been reaching out, and we've talked a lot about it when we were on the road. We've also talked a lot about, you know, what the solution is and the timeline and all that stuff. And apparently this spotted owl that we now got to keep an eye out for. But, you know, it's all moving forward in a halfway decent way. So I got to thank you all for those of you that have chatted and let me chat your ear off about kind of bottling, the stressors of it, and everything that's going to be happening out at the winery as we're trying to sort all this stuff out. Now, beyond just the normal bottling logistics and the mess that we get to deal with around setting that up and getting it done, is we also have the growing season that's kicked off. Some of you that are following wineries, whether that's on Instagram or YouTube or wherever it may be, you've probably seen plenty of pictures of bud break. The vineyards are growing. We've had a couple frosty mornings. You've heard the wind machines kick on. It sounds like a bunch of airplanes are trying to land around the valley. So you know it's been kind of some chilly mornings. We've had some bud break, so hopefully no one got frosted. I'm sure there's always a little bit every year. Hopefully it wasn't anything too drastic over the last like week or two when we had some chillier mornings. That doesn't look like there's going to be a whole bunch in the forecast, luckily enough. I think we should be looking pretty damn good for the rest of the season. I mean, it was 70 and sunny yesterday. It's supposed to be like 70 and sunny or low 80s even for the next couple of weeks. It looks like there's a storm that's on the horizon 2 weeks from now, but that'll probably blow through as it normally does. So if the vineyard hasn't pushed out, it hasn't started growing yet, it certainly is now, because springtime has sprung here in the valley during this first week of April, last week of March. It has been warm. It has been sunny. We're kind of through the rainy season. It's a beautiful thing. The great thing about how this growing season has really started is that we did see ample rainfall this winter, In fact, there were still some storms that rolled through, I think, last week or the week before. And the reason why that's a good thing is that if the ground is really wet and there's a lot of water available for the vines, we don't have to start irrigating that early. So it just lines it up for us to really kind of like knock it down. We don't have to be as stressed about water consumption and trying to, you know, space it out so we don't run out of water before, you know, the real harvest season kicks in. Like, all things considered, this 2025 season, knock on wood, is off to just as good of a start as we could possibly hope for. The weather is warming up at the right time. We got rainfall when we needed it. It hasn't been too frosty in the mornings, which has been great. It looks like, you know, with the diurnal shift that we have, we're not going to be seeing it, at least for the majority of the valley, dropping into the 30-degree range. There'll probably be some pockets here there that experience it. But valley-wide, it looks like we are off to just like a rocking start. It's, you know, not, don't want to count my eggs before they hatched kind of thing, but man, it's going to be really hard to argue with this 2025 season if it stays like this through the end of May, and then we'll just have to wait and see how hot and dry it is this summer to really start to evaluate where this vintage is going to go. But man, I'm very excited to report to all of you that the growing season has just been absolutely fantastic to get started. Can't wait. Honestly, cannot wait to see where the next like month or two goes. And it's really going to start shaping up to be an awesome vintage. Now, let's get back down to a little bit of this is kind of like the pseudo Q&A section. You know, we've got about 10 more minutes here. But the questions that we have been getting, you know, as the growing season has started, you know, as spring has started to come around, we still have continued to get some of the businessy discussions, questions that I mentioned at the top, where it's like, where's the grape market going? Like, how are wineries doing? Like, what's the vibe out there? And I think for a lot of people right now, and this is kind of where we're at, and I think this is where kind of a lot of wineries are at, is that last year ended up being so rough is that there's a lot of places playing catch up right now. And this is certainly where we are. Now, the good news is it seems as though Q1, as it wrapped up, you know, at the end of March, was pretty strong for everybody. You know, at least, you know, there was a good vibe around the valley that, hey, this first quarter really did a great job of making up some lost ground after last year. But I do think that, and this is the case for us, is that we're going to need an equally as strong second quarter to really right the ship. You know, luckily we've kind of plugged the holes. You know, we're not sinking anymore, but there's still a lot to be desired in terms of especially tourism coming back to the valley, wine sales around the country, whether that's through wholesale channels or wine clubs, things of that nature. I mean, everyone's still kind of holding onto their butts a little bit because we're waiting to see how it all shakes out. I think, you know, having a strong finish to last year, despite how down it was overall, and a strong start to this year bodes pretty well. I am, you know, given the all the economic turmoil and the stuff that we talked about earlier in the show, I think everyone is cautiously optimistic about where things are going in the industry and what consumer sentiment is and what we're trying to do to kind of hustle and keep people engaged and all that good stuff. So, you know, it's I think things are looking they're looking up. We'll see. We'll see exactly how it all shakes down in the next few months. Realistically, we do start to see a little bit of a downturn in business just naturally, typically like May into June because of like summer vacations and, you know, things kind of slow down a little bit and then they start to pick back up in late July and into August. So there's always kind of this like little bit of a squishy spot that we have to, you know, fill in and kind of get over. But once we get through that and continue to see an upswing into the fall, I think we're going to be set up for some success. There are a lot of wineries still hurting. You know, if there's still another bad year on the horizon, there's going to be a lot more M&A. There's going to be a lot more businesses that just go under. All kinds of stuff is going to really get shooken up if it continues to see a decline. But, you know, with a strong start to the year, it's going to be harder for that decline to happen. So, all good vibes so far around the industry. It's still a hustle. It's still a grind because we still have a lot of ground to make up after a down year last year, just as an industry. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But like I said, I think everyone is pretty cautiously optimistic. Now, when it comes to things like the great market, and many of you have kind of asked how the great market is shaken out so far, because this is kind of the quote like buying season. In fact, as I was standing here, I got a text from one of my growers stating, you know, they're ready to put together the contract and get everything all set up. Also got another email today about someone else who's looking to sell us some grapes, and we've continued to get calls and emails regularly about grapes that are available for sale. There's a lot of people wheeling and dealing quite a bit this year to try and make stuff happen. We will see how it all shakes out. It's my opinion that a lot of people are going to be overly cautious. Even if they see an up year this year, they're going to try to mitigate a lot of costs. There's a lot of people reducing their budget. I mean, shoot, we're trying to reduce our budget by a good like 15%. Like we are personally like hacking and slashing away at things that we just don't need, because we're trying to really rein in, you know, things and make sure that we end up in a much better position, you know, this time next year than we were this year. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of negotiating being done. I think the growers are still going to get stuck holding the bag this year. There is a ton of fruit available just through kind of the networks that we use as people are talking and trying, you know, as we get together with colleagues and friends and look at kind of the different forums and, you know, marketplaces that we tune into see who and what has fruit available and what varieties are out there and in what volumes. A lot of the prices are well below what the average price has been over the last couple of years. A lot of the volume is quite a bit compared to the last few years. It seems as though it is still going to be very much a buyer's market this year. And that's kind of going to be tough for people, because there's going to be plenty of folks that want to take advantage of that. You know, you want to buy the dip, right? Buy low, sell high. That's always the goal, right? And there are going to be a lot of people that are going to want to take advantage of these kind of lower costs of, you know, goods when it comes to, you know, the fruit that we're purchasing, but might not have the capital available to do it because of how kind of constrained we are right now. It's going to be a very interesting summer. I think that for us personally, we're going to have all of our grape contracts settled up by the end of this month. We're going to know exactly what we're bringing in and how much of it we're bringing in. In that same light, we're going to be figuring out our barrels shortly thereafter and trying to sort out, of course, the tariff issues, if we're bringing all that in from France or if they're already here in the States. I mean, we'll figure that out. And from there, you know, we'll try and see what happens, you know. But it's going to be, and this is something that I've personally told a lot of people, it seems like this is where a lot of wineries are right now. They're like, we're waiting to get through Q1 and then really start evaluating what we need for this upcoming season. And that seems to be where everyone is at. In fact, I've got one more quick trip this weekend. I get to go to good old New Braunfels, Texas, although I hear the Schlitterbahn's not open yet, which kind of is a bummer. Too early in the season, so next time. But once I get back, I think everyone's kind of in a mad dash to the finish here, to finish out April, have their contracts lined up, have barrels lined up, and basically have everything locked in for this upcoming season. So that is coming around the corner really, really fast. It is going to be really interesting economically what happens this year and what we see going into harvest and how much fruit is available or doesn't get picked, all that good stuff. It's going to be fun. So much fun. Fun, fun, fun. All right. I think that covered the entire large swath of all the craziness I wanted to get into today. This probably seemed a little manic. I apologize for that. But man, like this is what happens. This is why I need to try and do this every week. Because if I have a couple of crazy weeks and frankly just have no time to record, much less edit and get it posted, all this stuff like continues to build up, and then I got to try and do like the full, you know, release and dump of all this information. So thank you all for hanging in with me. There's a lot more coming down the pipeline in terms of the growing season, the expectations for this 2025 vintage. We're going to continue to keep an eye on, you know, this tariff situation, you know, how that's going to impact us in terms of some of the goods that we use in our wine production, but also how it's going to affect you, the consumer, when it comes to, you know, wines coming from other parts of the world. It's what a time to be alive. Crazy times. You know, who'd have thought? Who'd have thought that we'd all get to experience this together? I hope you all have an excellent rest of your week. Thank you all so much for tuning in, being a part of the show. We will be back next week. I haven't quite decided on a topic for April 16th. I'm going to get through this trip to Texas. I'll be back on Sunday, Monday, and then we're going to see what kind of stuff we want to dive into. I'm pretty excited one way or the other. I've got a few topics kind of lined up, potentially kind of expanding on some of the stuff that we talked about today, but of course a few other fun things in the wine business news world that we would like to dive into. So, but of course, be sure to follow us on any of our social networks at MTGA Wines, as on YouTube, the Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter, as well as Instagram. If you have any topics or questions that you would like to submit for future Q&A episodes, you can slide into our DMs on any of those networks. You can also head to our website, that's mtgawines.com, find out a little bit more about us. But if you scroll down to the bottom of the page there, you will see a little email form that you can fill out and submit questions that way as well. Because I do love to have these kind of continuing conversations about anything and everything that affects the wine business, hospitality, and of course, kind of the seasons and the great product that we get to make for you all. So I always love the feedback, always love continuing the conversation. Please stay engaged. We really appreciate it. Again, have an excellent rest of your week. We will see you next time here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.